Welcome back, and thanks for being with us on The Takeaway today. I'm Todd Zwillick. The European Union's highest court came down hard on Uber this week. It ruled that the app-based ride-hailing service should be regulated like any other taxi provider across the European Union. Now, Uber has fought for a long time to be treated by governments like a digital platform only, just an app that connects people who like to drive to people who need rides. And that identity, just an app, lets Uber avoid most of the responsibilities and liabilities and regulations of a traditional taxi or transportation business. Well, no longer, at least not in the EU. Meanwhile, Uber has seen similar fights all across America. Arun Sundarajan is an expert on that kind of model and these fights that are going on with ride sharing. Arun, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Arun, let's talk about this EU ruling first. What did the EU say to Uber, and what does it mean for drivers and for riders there?
So this was an anticipated ruling from the EU. In deciding whether Uber was a digital platform or a transportation service, they came down on the side that Uber is a transportation service, just like a traditional taxi service or a black car service. What this means is that all Uber drivers will have to be professional drivers. In all likelihood, Uber's relationship with its drivers will have to change from contractors to them being full-time employees. And so it dramatically changes Uber's cost structure if it wants to operate in different European cities.
If Uber wants to operate in Paris or Utrecht, you can no longer just say, hey, person with a Toyota and an app, drive and get some money. You have to treat them like a person with a job, with benefits and a pension and everything else.
I think the specifics of exactly how Uber drivers need to be treated are going to vary city to city. Like in the United States, across Europe, transportation is regulated at the local level. But it certainly sort of raises the bar for Uber because it's a business that has tried to bring in sort of casual labor to shore up supply shortages, like, you know, during rush hours. It's tried a wide variety of UberX-like services in many European cities, and these have already been shut down. What worries me more about this decision is that I think Uber is going to find a way around it. They've got the scale, they've got the demand, they've got the financial resources. For a smaller startup that's trying to enter a new European city, the barriers have just become a lot higher.
So it gets tougher for smaller players. But does this mean in the bottom line that the virtues of the gig economy, the sort of the cheap labor that was available in the Uber model, is not going to be allowed in Europe, at least not in the way that Uber had hoped?
Well, I don't think that it's going to be allowed for transportation services. I believe that this ruling will spill over to other gig economy or on-demand services like delivery on-demand, hiring people through an app. So it's certainly going to place a lot of barriers on platforms that offer these kinds of services and are currently using contract labor.
So let's come back to the United States then, because Uber, and it's just one service, although it's the biggest, the most high profile, it's been going into city after city, community after community in the United States. And it seems like every time they do, they wind up disrupting, maybe a good thing, but they wind up in a confrontation of some kind, either with local transportation services, which makes sense, or with the local economy. Give us a couple of examples of how Uber's been sort of confronting the different cities that it's gone into.
I think that every city that Uber has entered in the United States has led to some kind of confrontation early on. One of the early success stories was actually New York City. There was early confrontation, a ban back in 2012, but they very quickly came to agreement with the Taxi and Limousine Commission and found that middle ground between transportation service and digital platform. The city came up with regulations tailored for Uber. Uber complied with them. This contrasts with, say, Oregon, except for Portland. Uber is banned across the state of Oregon right now because they haven't been able to find that middle ground. I think that the service itself poses challenges because it flies in the face of what we're used to. But I think Uber's personality in the past as a pugilist rather than as a pacifier has also been partly responsible for the level of regulatory confrontation that we've seen them engaged in.
Now, Uber has relished this confrontation. I live in Washington, D.C. Certainly, there was a high-profile confrontation that Uber seemed to be enjoying when they came to town.
That was certainly Uber's personality in the past. I've seen a dramatic change in that over the last few weeks that their new CEO, Dara Khosrowshahi, has taken over, where he's trying to reposition Uber as a sort of a compliant partner who is worthy of the public trust rather than a disruptive Silicon Valley platform that breaks all the rules.
And this decision in the EU, is it likely to solidify that new attitude? I mean, there's a danger here maybe that big American cities and their city councils may take the cue from the European Union and say, no, we want you to be a taxi company.
Well, I'm sure that there will be some thinking in municipal governments in the United States sort of reflecting on the structures that they've come up with. But labor law in the U.S. is fundamentally different from labor law in the European Union. We're far more open to the independent contractor model here than cities in the European Union are. And so while I expect some reflection, I think we should also recognize that many American cities have spent many years coming up with the right regulatory structure that recognizes this new middle ground that exists between a hands-off digital platform that is unregulated and the traditional sort of taxi service with full-time employees.
And we're going to spend a lot of time over the next 2, 5, 10 years talking about this revolution in labor. This gig economy, it's not going away. This EU decision and the sort of patchwork model we have in the United States, what does this tell you about the future of this new way of working? Or is it too early to tell?
You know, we've gotten used to one model of work arrangement, people being full-time employees for a large employer. This was the dominant model in the 20th century in Western Europe, Japan, the United States. We're seeing a pretty dramatic shift away towards non-employment work arrangements. The gig economy, independent contractor arrangements are one such example. But I think it highlights the continued need to start to decouple the social safety net from the status of full-time employment and allow people who choose alternative work arrangements, people who run their own businesses, people who are independent contractors, people who are freelancers, from getting the benefits, the stability, the protection, the paid vacations that are currently the unique sort of privilege of full-time employees.
Well, we're a long way from that in this country. We've reported on this show that 180 million Americans still get their health insurance through work. So it's going to be a long time before that transformation. Arun Sundarrajan, thanks for being here. You getting an Uber out of here?
I'm getting a Juno, actually.
Arun Sundarrajan of NYU is leaving our studios in a Juno, small competitor to Uber, while Uber fights it out in the EU and across America. Arun, thanks for being here.
And thank you for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.